Kurt Cobain, the leader of the band Nirvana, would have turned 50 years old today. Nirvana skyrocketed to fame with this 1991 hit song, Smells Like Teen Spirit, but Cobain struggled with stardom and drug abuse. He killed himself on April 5, 1994. Journalist Charles Cross covered Cobain for the Seattle magazine The Rocket, which was the first publication to put Nirvana on its cover. Eventually, Cross wrote Heavier Than Heaven, a biography of the band, and in 2014 he published another book called Here We Are Now, The Lasting Impact of Kurt Cobain. When we spoke, I asked Charles Cross why he felt it was necessary to write a second book about Cobain.
Well, Heavier Than Heaven is a straight-on biography where it's written in the third person and I do not insert myself as a narrator at all. That book ends essentially with Kurt's death in 1994, and a lot has happened since he has died. And his impact on music and on culture we can see with a much wider lens now. I felt like there were certain things that I kind of wanted to get off my chest, and I wanted to tell the story in a first-person way. And so this book is kind of more like a conversation with me. It's some of the topics that I feel are very important about Kurt's legacy: addiction, suicide, music, fashion, and how he changed the perception of Seattle. I think I guess felt impassioned that I somehow had more to say.
And we want to talk about all of those things. But first of all, let's get to his musical impact. What do you think it has been 20 years now after his death?
Well, it's truly an extraordinary impact. I think it's greater than anyone would have imagined 20 years ago. To some degree, that's affected by technological change. Nirvana's impact, both in terms of the sales of their album, somewhere around 35 million albums sold. We haven't seen a rock group have that kind of huge mass cultural impact since Kurt died, partially because there hasn't been someone else to follow them. I think their legacy has been somewhat increased. But I also think that their greatest legacy is simply those songs. Those songs have such meaning to so many people. And when we talk about Kurt and why he mattered, that is by far and away the reason that he mattered, is that that body of songs that he created and wrote still speak to listeners today, both listeners that heard it in the 90s and people that are just discovering it now. That is an incredible body of work, and it's the reason that we still talk about him.
You write that Kurt had both everything and nothing to do with the term grunge, which we associate with these bands that came out of the Pacific Northwest. What do you mean by that?
He hated the word grunge, and pretty much everyone in Seattle hated the word grunge. And the reason was that grunge was kind of a journalistic laziness to describe all the music that came out of here. And if we just take Nirvana, for example, and we compare some of their music to Pearl Jam, there's so many differences. And though there are squealing guitars here and there, they aren't even really playing exactly the same genre of music. Yet, to everybody in the world, suddenly it all became grunge. And then you throw in Alice in Chains and Soundgarden, who had both more metal influences. It just was not really a fair term to describe everyone from our region as grunge. So Kurt hated it, musicians hated it, but to some degree it couldn't be stopped. It was the name that defined that music, it defined that generation, and it went on crazily to also even define fashion and a number of other things. Grunge has had a life in fashion that goes far beyond the life it has had in music.
Okay, let's talk about Kurt Cobain's impact on fashion. This is not something that I thought much about before reading your book, but he really was a fashion statement in the way that he dressed, and there are certain things about what he did that not only made a big splash back then, but are still big in the fashion world today.
Well, it's truly amazing because there has never been a fashion icon who put so little effort into their appearance and yet sold so many clothes at such a high price tag later on in his life. So Kurt wore flannel shirts, which he bought from Army-Navy stores for $5 or from thrift shops. And the reason he wore that is that's what people in Aberdeen and the Pacific Northwest wear because it's freezing for a lot of the year. And those designs eventually were co-opted by some of the hottest, you know, fashion designers, including Marc Jacobs, and were touted on fashion runways at $400 a pop. And they still are. Even this last year, there were a couple fashion designers who debuted what they called their grunge collection. So what's really remarkable is that grunge to most people in music means a certain time. It means the 90s. But in fashion today, if you went to Nordstrom.com and typed the word in grunge, you would find a half dozen outfits or styles that are described as grunge with current fashion.
Well, let's talk about another part of his legacy, his struggle with depression and substance abuse. He committed suicide, as we said, in April of 1994. And a few days after that, his widow, Courtney Love, recorded a message for his fans that was played during a vigil. Here she is reading his suicide note.
Sometimes I feel as I should have a punch-in time clock before I walk out on stage. I've tried everything within my power to appreciate it, and I do. God, believe me, I do, but it's not enough.
Charles Cross, you say that that event turned into brilliant public health policy. Why?
And rarely is it that the words Courtney Love and brilliant public health policy appear anywhere near each other. But in some strange way, that outpouring of emotion that you heard from Courtney and that you also felt in the crowd, and I was among the 10,000 there, there was such anger. It took away the romanticism of suicide. When Marilyn Monroe had died earlier with pills, it had sort of been romanticized by the press. But because Kurt's choice of suicide was so violent, so final, and frankly, because we got to actually hear his words, and everyone in the crowd at one point screamed a giant F you to Kurt. Courtney asked everyone to do that. There was this kind of collective unconscious primal scream that gave us a chance to kind of go through that emotion. And it took away that kind of English mysticism, romanticism of suicide. We got to see the face and hear the words of a person that had lost her husband. And I think it changed the way people thought about his suicide.
You think it kept people from committing suicide, other people?
Well, shockingly, the theory had always been that Kurt's death had, you know, set off a number of copycat suicides. For this book, the main new research that I was able to kind of break was that I interviewed some of the people who actually study suicide. And they extensively researched Kurt's suicide, both in the United States and in Australia. And they looked at suicide rates and found that they either stayed even or went down slightly in the wake of Kurt's death. Unfortunately, that statistic has eked up over time, and suicide remains an epidemic throughout the world and certainly in the United States. But Kurt Cobain's death, in some weird way that almost seems impossible to imagine, may have actually stopped some people from committing suicide more than what we thought, that it would send a wave of copycat suicides.
Talking about him in a way in the abstract here, you, of course, knew him. You were a fan. What impact did he have or does he continue to have on you personally?
Well, the music certainly impacted me. It was part of my life. The magazine that I edited, The Rocket, Kurt was also our customer. He advertised in The Rocket several times looking for drummers. So when we lost him, we really felt like we lost part of Seattle's soul, frankly. You know, Kurt Cobain is owned by the world, but Seattle, even though he only lived here for 18 months of his life, ironically, we feel that he is ours and we are his to some degree. These songs are so much the fabric of my life, and I think so much the fabric of every music fan in Seattle's life, that when we talk about his legacy, it's also to some degree our legacy, our youths. It was the one time where it suddenly felt to everybody here that the world could go on its end. We're talking in the offices of KUOW in Seattle. In the basement of this building, Nirvana played. So I'm 50 feet away from where this band played one of their very first Seattle gigs. So it really is a huge part of Seattle's historical legacy and part of our culture.
Charles Cross talking about his book, Here We Are Now, The Lasting Impact of Kurt Cobain. We spoke in 2014, and today would have been Cobain's 50th birthday.